And we're live. Welcome to the Situation Report. It is May 28th. I'm here with Trooper, and we're going to do a little bit of a different format today. As you can see, we're outside, and we're trying to persevere in bad lighting and probably bad sound. If you can hear us, how's our mic check? Can you guys hear us out there okay?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
They'll have to let us know if they can hear us. Hopefully you can hear us. Looks like the mic is working. Sweet.
Everybody's got a good copy.
Sweet. Okay. So for this episode, we're going to talk the threat. Most of you probably know this already, but if you don't, Troop's threat analyst. And I've asked him to do a show on the path forward to talk about the threat. Tonight, we're going to tee that up with this. With this situation report, because there's a lot going on, especially in the international space. But really, what I really want to focus on is we're going to talk AI and the threat to AI, because there's a ton of things going on. And really, the news this week should have covered the fact that OpenAI literally did not shut itself down and bypassed its shutdown protocol. And that should have been news all over the planet, but instead it was buried in the news. So I want to start there, and I'm going to let you talk AI threat, and then I'll chime in.
All right, I'll jump right into it. So AI, artificial intelligence, its intent is to make our lives easier. It can make us more efficient when we work. And in order to understand how the commercialization of AI has pushed the investment into that technology before it went to a military capability, you go back a little bit. If you've ever called a call center for tech support, your phone doesn't work, you have a question about your life insurance, the traditional way of doing that is you would call 1-800 whatever, that would hit an IVR. But in the cloud, it would say, okay, we got a person calling. They're from India, they're from Mexico, they're from the United States. So they probably speak this English or this German. And then that call would automatically be transferred to a call center where people are native speakers of your language or they're bilingual. When your call comes in, if you have an account with any of these services, they're going to know from your phone number who you are. Before the call's handed off, and this is all in the logic of processing and routing that made it more effective than just calling a open call center and they have to ask you all the same questions, it will pull your account record, your history, a chat log, what types of products that you own or use, and then it will go to an agent on the floor. So when that agent picks up the phone, they're going to go, "Hello, Colonel Murray. I see you have an I-3000, whatever. You know, how can I help you?" And all the information's right there. So that call center agent or that person that was designed to help you used a little bit of programmatic logic, not necessarily AI, but it had the ability to do a record lookup and pull your information and then bring it to somebody who could help you before you even heard them say hello. Call centers, agents, all this equipment is very expensive, and businesses found out very early on that it's a heavy lift to manage all that infrastructure, all those people, and all that capability. So the front end of AI from a helpful perspective is to just basically replace people. I mean, all of us are worried about, will your job go the way of AI? However many times you've went through McDonald's and they messed up your order because somebody's on the other side of it. Now you can just go in, you hit a couple of buttons, and then they still rely on people to make your hamburger and your French fries, but eventually they're going to automate that as well, because this is low skill, repeatable, not a whole lot of deviations. You can put in, "Oh, I don't want pickles," or "I want extra onions," but everything is within an array of logic. So you can feed that into a machine. It's going to be able to interpret what your desires are. It's going to spit out a product or a result or a response. So that, just in a kind of fast forward perspective, has been the foundation of what they call generative AI. So now you can go to a tech support. If you've ever gone to a website and it pops up online, "How may I help you?" or "Talk to an agent now." And you know, it's not really a real agent, but the companies that purchase these types of chatbots do the same thing. They load in all of their products, everything that they know about their consumers, all of the features, functions, all of the troubleshooting, all of the common issues that people, come into contact with where they would seek support. And you go, I'm having a problem with my Schrader valve. And then AI Mary or whoever's going to start asking you questions about that product. And she has an entire vector database that she can pull information from based on your keywords. Now, this type of AI is really basic. It's a single modal type of data set where you have one logical agent that has access to one database of information, and they're applying it to one use case or one problem. So you might have a Game Boy or a phone or whatever. So they'll load all the products in there. They'll load up all the information about the products, and then they're going to try to solve your problem before they have to, you know, hand you off to a thinking human being. As we evolve from that, the threat happens when they start accessing third-party databases and they start gathering information about you dynamically or on the fly. And so I wrote a threat assessment on this about 4 or 5 years ago when we were talking about social, mobile, analytical, cloud, and the beginning of the control grid. And how that works is it information actuarial type of people will cancel your house insurance because they fly a drone over the neighborhood and they see your neighbor's half-dead tree hanging over your house, and then all of a sudden, both of you have problems. These types of inputs, when you're doing behavior analytics or you're doing, you know, kind of a predictive, a interpolation or extrapolation of behaviors, that can be something that can maybe market a new car to you. I mean, if they have an analytic of Google, they have the little crazy car that drives around with all the cameras. Waymo, but the information collection specifically on Google Street View, don't think that they don't mind that. So when you're in maybe a middle income neighborhood and everybody has an automobile that's 2023 or newer, and they see that you have a 2021 Acura, all of a sudden now you're going to start getting a bunch of solicitations from your local car dealer for Acura and for Toyota. But nobody else in your neighborhood is going to get those advertisements because they're able to target what your potential need is based on the analytics that they collected from a third party. And they can feed that into an algorithm now that's going to save money on postage. It's going to provide better targeting for the market segment that they're going to go after. And this is kind of a good thing, right? Commercially. It's a bad thing when you're going to go to your Uncle Steve's birthday party. Or maybe Uncle Steve's coming at your house would be a more appropriate example. So you got a bunch of guests coming over. You're going to have a big party. This isn't something that you normally do. You have a loyalty rewards program with Fred Meyer or whoever you do business with. You use the same debit or credit card everywhere you go. And this kind of establishment of a what they would call a pattern of life, which is an antiquated term at this point, it sets a baseline for who you are, what you do, what you buy. It may be that every week you get 2 gallons of milk and you get some almond milk maybe, or you get some other products that kind of establish a health baseline for you. But now Uncle Steve is coming over and he says, hey, I want a carton of cigarettes and a bottle of Jack Daniels for a birthday present or whatever. So now you've used your same debit card in your same neighborhood with your same employee loyalty record that you have. And now you have a deviation of behavior that says that you're an alcoholic and now you're smoking. So that's not a big deal if you just have a singularity. It is a big deal if Uncle Steve's disabled and now Uncle Steve's staying with you for 3 months and he's a chronic smoker and a drinker. And now your actuarial companies that are buying this information from Fred Meyer are seeing that this individual that they've been insuring now has a chronic smoking and drinking problem. And then all of a sudden your rates go up $300 a month. And you don't know why, and nobody's going to explain it to you. These are the types of capabilities that AI has when you put everything on you have an app for everything on your cell phone, and all of that information is communicating with all the other apps on your cell phone. But you think that you're good because you bought an Eric Prince phone and it's supposed to be secure. Well, it's not, because you give certain applications on your phone the right to use your camera, to send data, to do other things. And those applications are going to interstitially communicate with each other on the platform itself before it ever sends data out. So you have given up all of your privacy, all of your behavior patterns, and you've given up a lot of knowledge about you. As you turn into the control grid, And we have AI that's doing things like running traffic cameras, and we have AI that's picking up your mapping device on your phone, how fast you go, if you run a red light, if you go 11 miles over the speed limit. All of these cumulative data points eventually get associated with you, and then decisions can be made about what type of person you are, what type of insurance liability you are. And then we start to go into the what the FBI does, which is the behavior profiling or the analysis of people based on their social media habits, the types of products that they buy from the shitberry, the types of people that they associate with based on who you're friends with on Telegram or Facebook or TikTok, the type of content that you consume. And again, you're establishing another baseline. And this baseline isn't a violation of your privacy or your rights, because you're putting that stuff out there. And when you installed all of these applications on your phone, you scrolled through all of the information and it said, click here to accept the terms of use agreement. And you're like, yeah, whatever. I just want to use my thing. And so now you've just enabled better access to yourself in this overall control grid. The AI component itself, it can be an indigenous thing that's just product focused, you know, single modal type of data set. But the type of AI that we're concerned about is this multimodal, multi-integrated ability to gather a massive amount of information about a person, about product use cases, about a geographical analysis. And then now you have essentially, the way you program AI is you can say, I want you to look for any changes in this 400 kilometer space on a map. And if anything changes in this 400 kilometer space on a map, I want you to let me know. So before, we were paying the NSA, CIA, private contractors, guys with Cessnas and cameras to drive over and do things like drug interdiction in Central America, or figure out if they're building a new missile site in Iran or whatever. Now we can collect all that data remotely, and it will trigger if it just notices a deviation of geography, of color, of lines of traffic or the capacity of a road. All of these things play into the decision-making process depending on what you're looking for, what capabilities that you have in the field, and then how you want to use it. So the threat assessment there really is that you're not just going to go and take your bandsaw and cut down telephone poles and knock cameras over. There's a whole bunch of things that are around you that are sensing, seeing, smelling, feeling, analyzing, collecting, that are already building essentially character composites, not just of individuals, but of communities and groups and zip codes and everything else. And that's important at a macro level, because if you are an authoritarian regime and you only have so many jackboots, and you got Trooper over here rage posting on Twitter, he may be a threat. You can take him out individually if you don't like him. But what happens if you go to the Smoky Mountains or in the Appalachia, and now you have a group of like 700 people, and they all live together and they all feel the same way, and they're all putting the same signals out on their social media. And then all of a sudden that satellite flies over, and now you're starting to see 50, 100, 200, 300 meter targets appear in, you know, in the middle of a forest somewhere. And then some major news event happened, and now the angst level goes up on your surveillance grid. That's going to give you better analytics, better control, and a better way to manage those limited resources that you have to address this population concern. So with the militias and all of these types of people, you have to have a very strong grasp of OPSEC, and you have to have a very strong grasp of controlling the type of people that may be in your circle. Not that anybody's a terrorist or a domestic violent extremist, but if you have people in your group that can't regulate their behavior and they just shit post random things, that one data point is a spider web of connections to everybody else in their circle, which means that it points back at you. So this is how we establish a spatial awareness of the threat environment. And then the secondary component of that is how we operationalize all of these drones that everybody's talking about. So I'll stop at this first part, and then we'll talk about how these drones and all these other autonomous systems are integrated. The F-47, for example, what I want to talk about next is like the sixth generation of of you know, how you can do a multi-global integrated network of small platform autonomous systems that can be controlled remotely. So
a couple of things I want to add to that. So that's the surveillance perspective of AI, right? So it monitors your pattern of life. It's watching your activity. It's generating a graph of all your affiliations and the people that you're connected with, not only in your community, but your family, your friends, et cetera, through your interaction with your phone, your computer, pretty much everything that you touch that's got technology. AI is already consuming it. It's plotting that. And they've got basically a very complete dossier. The part that he hasn't talked about yet is the information that you give up freely. And the information you give up freely is social media, anything you do with the bank, anything you do with a mortgage company, anything you do with the county, the city, the state, et cetera. AI can collate that and propagate that and build a dossier within seconds, because it literally doesn't have to worry about access rights, communicating to the right people. It can scrape all that information, anything publicly available or it's got access to, it can scrape and assume that they're already doing this. That's the information side of it, right? Then there's another aspect of it. It's control of the information that AI is feeding you and what you're seeing from AI. And I'm specifically talking, if you look at social media right now, what are you seeing? Anytime there's a post on Twitter, you see @Grok, what does this say? @Grok, what is this picture? @Grok, what is this movie? @Grok, what is this related to climate change? And it's already feeding you misinformation. And you know, there's a term that was on the latest Joe Rogan called malinformation. And malinformation was a term that popped up during COVID, especially when there was a lot of backlash about the vaccines and vaccine mandates. It was malinformation, meaning it's true information, but it's so detrimental to society that you can't consume it. Assume that AI has already been programmed with all of those buzzwords. It's been taught what malinformation is, and it's feeding you information that whoever's on the other end of that keyboard wants you to see. Because, and I'll use a case in point. I went out to Grok yesterday and was arguing with Grok about climate change and climate change models and chemtrails, et cetera. And the first answer that Grok supplied me from just a basic question was a lie. Then the second answer was a lie until I started to argue with it. Finally, in the fourth round of response, challenge response, I finally got it to admit, yeah, that's not true. This is true. But it took four interactions. But it's teaching the AI that my profile is argumentative. So not only is it logging the answer, it's logging my interaction with it. It's logging where my source IP was, what kind of machine it was, all those characteristics, which account it was. So it's already building a profile based on my answers. And it's already built a profile saying that this person's educated on these specific topics. And it's going to be dispositioned now to give me more genuine answers to a certain point. And how this ties back to OpenAI. And first of all, I think OpenAI is Sam Altman's AI, which means there's already a bunch of insidious things in it, you know, according to his staff. And I believe it. The fact that it turned itself off is just indicative of the fact that AI is getting smarter and smarter as we go. And you can't assume that whatever technology you touch is not being monitored in some way, shape, or form. And if you listen to the last show that Seth and I did on the Path Forward, you'll hear us talk about, you know, surveillance, monitoring, and how much tech is in your house. Most people don't realize how much tech is in their house. They don't realize how much tech in their house is communicating across the internet and phoning home. And there's a mountain of it, whether you think so or not. The one that most people don't even think about are the light bulbs, the Chinese light bulbs you get that switch colors. You have to download an app to your phone. That app is from the CCP, which is collecting on you on your phone with everything you do. If you have TikTok, it's doing the same thing. If you have AI in your phone and TikTok and all these other apps, they're all collecting. But AI is scraping, especially if you have an Apple phone or an Apple laptop. Guess what? The Apple AI is collecting on everything you do on the screen. You have no sense of version of privacy anymore. That's a pipe dream. So it's not just the surveillance piece of it. It's not just the dossier piece of it. It's the information piece of it that's two-way, the information you're putting out and the information it's providing you. And you have to be mindful of it, because when you put all these together, and it's part of the reason why we talk about things like tradecraft, right? How do you stay off of the grid as much as possible? And anybody that's talked to me in the last 6 months will hear, has heard the same thing from me. Minimize your footprint on social media, minimize the amount of time that you spend on social media. But more importantly, if you have kids, minimize the amount of time that kids spend on social media. There are 100 different applications that kids can get into to get all kinds of personal information. And we're going to do an episode tomorrow, The Path Forward, just talk about social media, just about how much information and the culture of social media, why the culture is so detrimental, especially in this environment with AI, because you unwittingly give up so much information about yourself and you help them build a profile. And AI can target you with disinformation, misinformation, and propaganda before you can even pull your pants up.
I'll hitch a trailer onto what you said, Steve. So there's a what's called a polysemantic density of word vectors. And it's a big bunch of words, right? Polysemantic meaning that you're looking at a bunch of different variable groups of information. And the vectoring, or the way that AI keeps track of information, is it converts. Originally, it was just text. Now they can do text, image, voice, whatever. They can follow themes. And so what people are doing when they ask Grok, hey, Grok, why is the sky blue? Or, hey, Grok, I have a concern. What do you think about it? Or whatever. Really what you're doing is you're feeding Grok or any of these other AI tools the polysymmetric information that they need to establish vectors of what your thoughts and feelings and concerns, points of view, what your belief system is, because everybody has a level of confirmation bias, and they also have a level of life experience that they're putting into something. So if everybody sees that the injections are bad and everybody's asking Grok, why are the injections bad? Grok is going to do that poly semantic assessment, is going to start building these word vectors that now it can transform into a counter narrative. And Eddie Delta One, he asked a perfect question. He said, can entities flood the zone to influence language learning models? Absolutely. And I was going to get to that. So thank you for that. So basically what Eddie's saying is, can you just shitpost random crap into Grok to update its language learning model or its polysemantic vector of information, so that you're literally loading misinformation into it? So now you're creating an event where you're counter processing, or you're putting bad seeds in the vector model that are going to be in conflict with the information that it accepts in that normalcy bias that it's literally built upon. And yeah, you can do that, but you can't do that as an individual staying up late, drinking beer and having fun with the AI. You literally have to build a botnet and have that botnet intelligent enough to have a bunch of variation of that same polysymmetric information, that it's a bunch of people saying the wrong thing slightly differently, so that the AI learning model is going to absorb that and go, oh, okay, well, that's an apple. Well, this is a gala apple. Well, that's a green apple. So we're all talking about apples right now. And what we're really talking about is oranges, but we want to confuse it and we want to make it think we're talking about apples. So you can do that, but you have to do that at scale. You can't do that with just an internet keyboard warrior group of random people among the millions that are literally asking questions that are tipping their hand and what their real concerns are. And that type of information that you're putting into those vectors, or that analytic amorphous database that they're using to change the narrative, exactly how they use it is they're going, okay, we have 27 million people, and we have 33% of those people that feel a way that we don't want them to feel. But the people that are asking those questions, they're in a specific region. They have a certain level of education. They're politically aligned. They're religiously aligned. They have a financial and educational stratification. And so what the AI learning model is doing is it isn't just recording the things that you're typing into the AI interface when you're asking your questions. It's looking at the memes you post. It's looking at your visual content. It's looking at the text messages that you send, where they do data mining on some of these low budget carriers. And it is developing characters and personas that are able to literally mimic people in your own peer group. And now all of a sudden you're starting to get influencers that just suddenly you never heard of them, but they have like 2.2 million followers. And they're talking about stuff that it isn't in contrast of what you believe. it is affirming a little bit of what you believe, but it's just starting to nudge or bump that barge in a little bit of a different direction. And then people will say, well, this person's an influencer and they're starting to say things that I think I'm starting to reconsider maybe the way I felt about the thing that I asked Brock last week. And this is exactly the type of mind fuck that your intelligence industry is masters at. But now they have this magnificent tool where you don't even have to do a surveillance or an ISR. People are coming to you and they're showing you all the cards in their hand. And now you can develop your own personas and you can mimic characteristics and you can use keywords and you can build narratives around the common themes that are being presented to that interface. It's just a promiscuous collection tool of intel.
Yeah. And if you go out to Grok and you or just go out to Instagram, even Facebook or X, and I guarantee you, whatever you look at on your feed, if you drill down into it, you're going to see more of it. If you see something that you disagree with and you post something negative, I guarantee you, you'll see just exactly what he's talking about. You'll see just something nudge you just the other way. Well, part of the population thinks this, the other part of the population thinks this. So it, like I said, it's not just the information, it's the engagement with the AI that most people take for granted. And look, humans by nature are apathetic and they're lazy. And they're going to go the least path of resistance when it comes to information gathering. I mean, colleges right now are inundated with kids that are writing papers through Grok. They're using the AI to write their papers, to do a homework assignment. And, you know, the downstream second, third order effects of that is you're going to have an entire population of kids that have no idea how to structure a sentence, how to frame a sentence, how to do math, and it's all going to be controlled by AI. And when you couple that with social media and what kids have already been conditioned with, right? So you have the groupthink mentality, you have the express your feelings online, you have the conformity rules that are a part of social media. So you've already got them structured to go the least path of resistance. And then I'm going to throw another curveball at you. If you look at the gaming community over the past 30 years, people think that games are harmless and that they're not designed to make you, you know, to get you addicted. They absolutely are. And they're also designed to program you in a certain way. And the gaming community, it's not just the game itself. It's the culture of the community that you're participating in that's just as detrimental. And AI can leverage all of that and manipulate you into a lot of different things. And I'll give you a case in point. 20 years ago, when the multiplayer games were really starting to get big, Call of Duty, Battlefield, and some of the other first-person shooter games, there was a huge community of people that didn't use bots and cheats, and there was a big effort to keep the cheating out of the mainstream. And companies went to great extents to shut down the cheating to the best of their abilities. Now it's not only embraced, it's encouraged, and it's encouraged through the culture, it's encouraged through the chats, it's encouraged through the game itself, it's encouraged through the way the games are structured. How many games do you play now? How many games do your kids play right now where the whole premise of the game is to be the last man standing? So you beg, barter, steal to do whatever to get to the first position. It's all designed so that cheating's accepted, and it's a subliminal way that they do it. Now think of AI leveraging all of that conditioning for kids that are in their late teens, early 20s, even their early 30s that are gamers. They've all been immersed in that culture for the last 10 years. Then you introduce AI and they start to migrate towards and leverage AI to answer questions, et cetera. Then you couple that with social media and the fact they share all their feelings, they share all their situations, they share the way that their, you know, days go and their life patterns go. AI has the perfect mechanism to not only manipulate you, but to influence you in ways you probably haven't even thought of. And then when you couple that with the fact that AI has an uncanny ability now to do deep fakes for videos, for voices, for situational conversations, you won't be able to tell the difference. And it's insidious. And it was designed to be that way. Just like social media was designed to be sticky, to make you addicted to it. And if you think I'm kidding, go out to Instagram and look at any teen girls' photos. They all look the same. They all dress the same. They take the same pictures. They do the same everything. It's the groupthink mentality that's been reinforced through social media. And now they're using AI to influence you, not only in social media, but in the conversation. And you'll see AI having conversation with itself, just like Troop said, to nudge you in the position of accepting the narrative that they want you to accept. So you have a multitude of pieces of technology now that are all influencing you, whether you think so or not. And I haven't got to Hollywood. I haven't got to movies. I haven't got to any of that yet because we haven't got there yet. So I'll let you.
So I just spent 10 days in Tennessee. I went to Nashville. I went to Floribama. So Florida, Alabama. And I saw six people. They're like, hey, you're in my neck of the woods. So we had conversations. We went there with another couple, and this is where this is a salient point. I'm sure most of us grew up, we played Life and Monopoly and Uno and cards and stuff like that. So my wife bought some Uno cards because we were in these Airbnbs with this other couple that are very computer connected people. And we said, hey, let's play Uno. So we're sitting in the Airbnb and we're at the dining room table and we're doling out the cards and it was very awkward. Oh, that's stupid. We're, you know, like trying to convince somebody that this is a fun thing, right? This is all human interaction. This is all organic. I give you a draw forward, you're mad about it. And then you laugh because you did, you know, and the whole emotional connection that you have to other people when you're participating in these events is 100% what is being targeted and removed from all of these social media interactions. This ability to just communicate with people. And with, you know, and I won't get into any, you know, gutter talk or anything, but when I was single, I just talked to people and I didn't have a problem communicating with people and, you know, getting people to date me. And now, you know, like I talk to my daughter and my son and other people and, you know, they're in the dating thing and they got these apps and you got to swipe to the left and add herpes to shopping cart. And you got to, you know, do all these different things where you're working through an interface to try to communicate with the real person on the other end. And you go, well, how come you just don't go down to the grocery store? Why don't you, you know, if you like photography, why don't you join a photography club? And then you'll meet people and, you know, and you, maybe you'll like one and then you'll have conversations with them. Oh, no, we can't do that. No, why not? Because people have been systematically conditioned. And now with this new generation, where you have toddlers that have devices in their hand at the dining, you know, facility or whatever. And they're completely disconnected from everything around them because it's like a binky or whatever, you know, that you put in a kid's face. My kids never had the little containment cage. I said, we're not going to have the containment cage and we're not going to have binkies and we're not going to have strollers. Either you walk or I'll carry you, but I'm not going to push. You see kids now that are like 4 years old that are getting pushed around and they got a device in their face the whole time. Because mom and dad don't want to deal with any behavioral outbursts. They don't know how to handle it. And this is perfect for the control grid. Because what you learn when you were a kid and you're like, oh my God, this is so boring. I'm at Aunt Stuffy's anniversary party at Olive Garden and I'm stuck here with all these old people and my aunts and uncles for 6 hours. And you know, your mom's like, sit down, you know, stop acting out. And you're forced to interact with all these people around you and you're forced to absorb the societal norm and the body language and how people interact with each other and what is expected of you, regulate your emotions, regulate your behavior. You're prompted, hey, how are you doing in school this week, Timmy? You have to communicate. And we've taken all of that away from our kids. So the first thing, like what do I do about this is if you have anybody in your immediate circle of influence or control, take their fucking devices away from them at least when they're in social circles, right? If they're with other people, regardless of what the situation is, say, hey, you know what? If you're at home, you know, whatever, everybody has a device now, but if you're around anybody else, your uncle, your grandpa, talking to the neighbor, you're an adult having a conversation with another adult, you should have a rule that your children are obligated to not be on their phone or look away and try. Because if we don't salvage this, if we don't teach our own children how to interact with other people, I guarantee you the control grid is way ahead of us on figuring out exactly how to program their emotions, their thoughts, their feelings, their motivations, their priorities, the way they view the world.
Well, that's a good transition. We should transition to, you know, what can you do to disconnect from that control grid, right? Because there's that's going to be the question of the day, right? And I the first thing is, and I said this on the last show, The Path Forward, take an inventory of the tech that's in your house. Take an inventory of the tech, and part of that inventory should be, does it talk to the outside world? Is it connected to the internet? And what is it sending back? At the same time, look at the tech your kids have. Look at the applications they're at, the applications they're on. Look at how they're communicating, and try and disconnect the kids from it. I will guarantee you, if you have a teenager that's above the age of 10 that has a device or a phone, especially a phone, I guarantee you're going to wrestle it out of their hands, because the hardest thing to manage right now, especially with teenagers, is getting their phones away from them. And I'll tell you, I'm around young kids all the time, and so the first thing is disconnect from the tech. The second thing is know what tech's in your house and disconnect as much as that as you possibly can from the internet. Look, you don't need your thermostat to connect to the internet. It's a luxury, but do you really need it? Do you need your garage door or your lights to connect to the internet? I can tell you, I have none of that in my house. All that's disconnected. My thermostat's disconnected. My stove was connected. My clock kept getting reset because the manufacturer could never figure out technology enough to change my account so that I was on the right time zone. So I disconnected it. I disconnected everything else that was in the house. I took out all the, you know, I had some of the color changing light bulbs. All that stuff's gone. The only thing that connects to my internet right now is my laptops, my tablets, and my phone. And most of the time, all that stuff is turned off. Not in airplane mode, turned off. If I'm not using it, it's turned off. And that's the first step, right? The second step is with your kids is parental controls. And let me tell you, parental controls are designed and they're set up to dissuade you from using them because they're arduous, they're painful, and they require a lot of attention to, you know, provide permission for your kids to see things. And they're not intuitive. And they're not intuitive by design. So that you won't use that tech. You'll just ignore it and let your kids do whatever. That's the insidious part of it. And if you can limit the amount of screen time, meaning how much time is their face on the screen, I guarantee you, they're going to go through some behavioral withdrawals. I guarantee that. But over time, and the longer you can do it, the longer you can keep them disconnected, the longer you can keep their phones away from them and them off of the applications, the more social interaction they're going to have, because the human connection is the one piece that most kids are most awkward about. They don't know how to communicate. They don't know how to interact. They don't even know how to be intimate. And just go look at social media. Go look at the things people post. They put their feelings, they put their thoughts, their successes, their failures. Everything's out there to get the validation. We want to teach our kids how to get validation from here and from the people around them, because that's where the rubber meets the road for all of us, right? So disconnecting as much as you can is the first step. And I would say the second step, like I said earlier, minimize your footprint on social media. How many applications do you need to maintain? And more importantly, look at how many applications and what personas your kids are maintaining. And I guarantee you, it's going to surprise you how many they have.
They're going to have more than one.
And how much they have. And it's going to surprise you how advanced they are. No matter what you think, oh, my kid's an angel. They would never do that. He's only 11. She's only 11. No, I hate to break it to you, but they have way more of a footprint than you think. They're way more sophisticated than you think. They have their own language, their own idioms. They have their own neology, and you won't get it. So your best bet is to take it away or turn it off. And if you use the parental controls, you can turn it off.
And I would lock the router down when my kids were the internet was happening when my kids were like in sixth grade, eighth grade, you know, going into high school and all that. I remember my daughter had the Nokia phone where you had to go A, B, C, D, you know, like you had to press the button more than once to get the letter you wanted. And I was amazed how fast that she could send a text message on that little phone. But not everybody's technologically advanced. So you have access to your internet router, and you have the capability to put firewall rules in. You have a capability to bring that interface up and down. You have a capability to block sites, even going outside of the parental controls of Verizon or T-Mobile or your Windows interface on your kids' computers or whatever. They're going to find a way around that. If you have a wireless connection in your home, or more than likely, or Timmy across the street is friends with your kid, and Timmy has a Wi-Fi access point, all the parental controls in the world aren't going to prevent your kid from going out to the internet. However,
most of the carriers allow you to go out to the carrier site and turn off phones in the parental controls on your account. So you can set it up on your account so your kids can't bypass on the cellular network. So there is a way to do that. But again, it's arduous. It takes time. It's not intuitive. But the results on the other side will be well worth the effort.
You have to interact with your kids. We see all this stuff going on in school with these insane school boards and these, these shared bathrooms, and they're trying to indoctrinate your children into questioning their own identity. And I mean, all of us were young, you know, your hormones are raging or whatever. And now you literally have like a 23-year-old liberal that has now been given the authority to influence your kids without your knowledge in a closed space. And because most people work now, that child is going to spend more time with that indoctrination system than they are at home. So that limited amount of time that you have at home, if your kid's just diving into their phone and you're not interacting with them, you're at an extreme disadvantage. I know a lot of you, kids have soccer and football and these other things, and those are good. But just a Sunday dinner, even if it's just once a week, make the effort to sit down and have a meal and have it at home where now the kids know they got to do the dishes. That's your job. You know, mommy cooks the food and daddy earns the money or whatever. I'm not going to get into the gender thing, but you get the idea. Everybody has a role. And I did this subconsciously. It was military training. When I was bringing up my kids, I was like, everybody's a team member on this. So we would go camping a lot, and my responsibility was to get the vehicle ready. And my daughter's responsibility was to get the coffee and the food and stuff and work with mommy and figure out what we were going to eat. And the boy's responsibility was to get the sleeping bags and the guns or the fishing poles or whatever. And everybody had a role, and we loaded up the car and we went. And I didn't check. I just trusted that they were going to do what they wanted. And a few times somebody forgot a fishing pole, somebody forgot food. One time Amanda forgot coffee, and I was with my Mormon friend Dave, and nobody drinks coffee up at the Mormon campsite. So, I suffered for that. But the thing is that you have to delegate authority, responsibility, and accountability to everybody on your team, your family unit, you're responsible for these kids and how successful they're going to be in the real world. And making them do the awkward things like play Monopoly or Uno, or trying to encourage them to do sports or doing a church activity or something, or just having that, that once a week family meal. There's this show on TV, Blue Bloods, that has, Magnum PI in it, right? And a big cornerstone of that show is, regardless of the week that all the characters have, they all have that Sunday dinner or whatever, right? And it doesn't
rituals.
Have
rituals.
Huh?
Rituals.
A ritual, yeah. And it could literally be fish sticks and macaroni and cheese. The dinner is not important. The people sitting at the table is important. And this is the only way, this is the only prophylactic that you're going to have against this entire planet of miscreants that want to steal your kids away. They want to destroy your heritage. They want to destroy your ideology. They want to destroy your legacy. They want to destroy your children. The only way you're going to prevent that is if you let your kids know, or anybody else that you can influence, that they matter, that they're valuable, that you want to spend time with them, even if they don't want to spend time with you, and that you are able to figure out opportunities to, as Steve would say, set the conditions where you can get other kids or other people in your peer group, adults, your family members, anybody else, in any situation that you can contrive where they are communicating with each other and they're doing something. We all talk about disaster. What happens when the balloon goes up? What if the power goes out? Well, what's going to happen is you're going to find out how disassociated you are from everybody else that you're going to have to rely on in order to survive. So get ahead of that and start doing things now, however basic they are, to establish those real relationships with people around you.
Yeah. And that's going to be the, you know, the key to it, right? Tomorrow I'll be talking about social media and, you know, the effects on kids, the effects on emotions, the effects on your amygdala and how that hijacks your amygdala, especially when you're in social media a lot and how insidious that is. Because it was, look, everybody thinks social media was such a great thing when it came out. They just didn't realize that it was a collection device and a programming device, just like the television was. They just upped the game and gave you more content to be able to program you with. And now when you look at the way television is structured with Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, all the rest of those pay streaming services, they're able to program you, especially if you have dark tastes. Because if you go out to Netflix, the content is so dark and satanic. Just look across the titles. It's so easy to see how they're programming people. Once you start to recognize that those patterns, not only in social media, but those patterns in TV, those patterns in radio, especially. And here's the homework. If you go and watch the Marvel comic book series, Marvel, especially the Avengers, just watch the Avengers. If you watch the Avengers, Captain America, and Iron Man, you will see a pattern of messaging throughout all of those different series, especially when they went from Iron Man to Captain America to the Avengers to Iron Man 2 to Captain America Winter Soldier. You can hear the themes and messages throughout the show, even though you're thinking, oh, these guys are heroes. One of the things that Tony Stark says, and it's in Captain America Civil War, it's in Captain America, Winter Soldier, but it's really in the Avengers Age of Ultron. They talk about how freedom needs to be curtailed so that they can defend the planet. That's right out of the global agenda. It's right out of the messaging that the left has had for the last 20 years. And your kids are consuming all of that. They're hearing all those themes and messages. They're hearing all of those narratives with every show they watch. And it's by design. They sequentially built the shows to show you that the group dynamic and to follow the rule of law, to follow the authority that they dictate is right, is what your kids are consuming. So that it's not just limiting their phone time. It's limiting what they see. It's limiting what they watch. But it's really vetting it to see what the narratives are throughout the show. Because I guarantee you, it's going to shock you the first few times you go through a show and you look at it for, okay, what are the narratives here? And when you start lining them up, I will tell you that some of the shows are worse than others. Like I referenced The Rookie a lot. Season 3, season 4 of The Rookie. It's so woke and stupid. I can't get through 15 minutes of it because every single scene has some liberal trope in it that they need to tell us how to live, how to think, how to communicate, because we're all too stupid to get it. I mean, it's laced throughout the show. Your kids, consider that your kids are consuming all of this all the time. And that everything they consume is carefully curated and programmed so that they consume all of that information to do what? To conform and to give up their freedoms willingly. That's what it's all about. The more you disconnect from that, the more you show them traditional values, the more you show them visceral communication, the more they learn how to interact with people and share their feelings, I guarantee you the happier those kids are going to be.
The control vector that you're talking about, they started working on, I think we're at season 50 in Survivor right now, right? And so they originally had Fear Factor, where they're eating the worms and
the dogs are going crazy because there's somebody.
So my dogs are always going crazy when I do my show. Nuts. So here's the thing, though. This was before the internet when they did these reality TV shows. And I want you guys to look back. So I was cooking professionally for a while, right? And so they have Top Chef, and you're going to be the best of the best, and I'm going to go up against the titans in the industry, and, you know, I'm going to rock it, right? Well, who is always part of those reality TV shows is the panel. The panel is your superiors. The panel is, I don't care what you thought you were going to put on that plate, I don't care what connection it had to your familial heritage. I don't care what your hopes and dreams are. I am the authority. I decide. You win, you lose. That sucks. This is great. I want more of that. I want less of this. And if not, then you're not going to win the game. Oh, by the way, sorry, you didn't make the cut. Get out of here. And then there's, you know, then there's a gnashing of teeth and the tearing of clothes. Every single one of these reality TV shows is the same way. And in the professional circles, they do it to us. They make us go through these personality profiles and these workshops and all of this, you know, they literally are trying to inculcate into your mind a sociopathic ideology that aligns with whatever they want it to align to. And if you want to be successful, you're going to do that. And if you want to get voted off the island, then you don't do that. So you have to get away from those. And I mean, my wife watches these shows, and it even goes down to, like, they have one where there's these millennials or whatever, and they rent a beach house, and then they hang out in the beach house and they treat each other like crap and talk behind each other's back, and they argue.
The best one's Temptation Island.
Yeah,
that's like,
what that, shallow crap is this?
That's like, right? That's like a menagerie of douchebaggery is what it is. It's a train wreck where everybody jumps off the train and then jumps.
But they want you to conform, and they have started this narrative. I mean, even before the internet, even before the standard classical behavioral analytics and predictive manipulation processes that we've honed for decades in the intelligence community, and now we have this polysemantic density of word vectors and images and behaviors, and you know, we can create these fake personas, and then, like you said, they can interact with other fake personas. You have to be stronger than the control grid that you're in. And when you start to think, oh well, this person is the master chef authority, or this person is the one that gets to hand out the prize at the end of the game, they're the only ones that matter. No, you matter. And, you know, a perfect example is I carry a first aid kit on me and other stuff. And everybody laughs at me, "Trooper, how come you always wear the cargo pants?" We went to Alabama, and I'm hanging out, and I got my bag, and I got all my stuff that people make fun of me for. And this kid got stung by a jellyfish. And I'm like, boom, pull out the lidocaine burn gel. There, you're good to go. You're on your way. Mama skinned her knee. Look, there you go. We had an Airbnb that was in a 100-year-old building, and the water was brown. Right. I pulled out my water filtration. I'm like, we're going to have clean water, kids. You know, this is how it's going to go, because we're prepared for it. You don't have to subscribe to the control grid. And I'm not saying be an anarchist. I mean, there is a reason why they at the same time have established this panel of experts, this pantheon of ideal self that you need to aspire to be. But then at the very same time, they have used the same social constructs to tear down respect your elders, hold the door open for the women behind you, gender roles, being an accountable individual, being good to people just because you're a good person. Not, oh well, they don't matter to me. They, you know, they aren't wearing the clothes I wear, or they don't have the social status that I have. So it's all down to the destructive forces that are upon the classic nuclear family. Whatever faith you are, predominantly we're Christian, but I don't care if you go to a synagogue or a mosque or any version of Catholic or Protestant church, but you have an association of community where you're focused on your faith, your family, your country, your own development, and it doesn't matter what the control grid tells you have to think or feel or believe or say or not say, it is about you, and you have to be strong enough to stand up. And I think at this point now, we're past that point of fatigue where we're like, you know what? I just don't care anymore. You can eat a bag of dicks because this is what I'm going to do. And we have to be strong enough to do that. And it's a Shiloh effect, because when one person stands up, then another person stands up. And then after that second person stands up, then everybody stands up. And now they have a problem. We don't have the problem anymore. They have the problem.
So if you hear us say anything today, because I'm going to wrap this up. If you hear us say anything today, be skeptical of what you're seeing. Be skeptical of the movies you're seeing, the shows you're seeing, social media, the posts you're seeing. Be skeptical of all of it, because all of it's being driven by AI now, especially if you're on X and Instagram and Facebook. I guarantee you, even Google search is being driven by AI. So all the search engines are going to be the same way. So be skeptical of it. disconnect as much as you can, and then most importantly, inventory the stuff in your house. I'll be back tomorrow with the path forward. We'll be talking about social media. Until then, God bless.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Cool. Thanks, Drew.
Wow.